It's Tough to Be a God. Written by Nirej Siki. Read by Opalsong. Fandom Mo Dao Zu Shi, or The Untamed. Rating, G. Category, Gen. Also tagged for Ascension, Godhood, Non-Cultivator Politics, and Emperor. Summary. Everyone has their own theories about how Jiang Cheng, of all unlikely people, got the opportunity to become a god. They're all wrong. It started with a kind act and a story. Everyone thought it started later, with Jiang Cheng rebuilding the Lotus Pier with his own hands, side by side with cultivators and common folk alike, working on it night and day. The real cause for his enthusiasm was insomnia, spurred on by endless nightmares. But to an outsider, it looked a lot like virtue. When there was no more building to be done, he took up his sword and went night hunting. Not for fame or glory, though he would hardly refuse those, but simply to have something to do. Nothing, no matter how small, escaped his grasp. It's said that Han Guangjun went where the chaos was, but he never needed to come to Yunmeng. Jiang Cheng, as terrifying as he might be, a force of nature and wind and lightning, would always get there first. Everyone thought it was because of Zijian. After all, to a common person, what sort of person can call lightning into their hand with little more than a thought? Even cultivators, rarely seen and mysterious, could not reliably do such a thing. And Jiang Cheng's ancestors had generally been respectful of the ancient spiritual weapon, using it only for war. It wasn't that Jiang Cheng wasn't respectful of Zijian. It was only that in time it became as much a part of him as his own right hand, and he had never learned to stay his hand when anger filled him from head to toe. Zijian crackled on his knuckles when his nephew irritated him, when something went wrong, when he felt upset. The sight of the lightning comforted him, reminded him of his mother's devotion, and let him feel powerful when he felt powerless. Still, it did mean the common people saw a lot more of it than they had before. Some people, including Jiang Cheng, thought it was because of Wei Wuxian. The majority only thought that Wei Wuxian, that daring genius, that talent that hadn't been seen in 1,000 years, had done something. The minority, who knew what it was he had done, the truth of the golden core settled in Jiang Cheng's belly, believed that it was Wei Wuxian's merits that had set Jiang Cheng on the road to glory. Those people were all wrong. It was true that cultivation was a means to fight against one's fate, and that it could, if perfected, give a man the chance to leap up to a higher branch and become a god in a single moment. The right opportunity of fate and luck and merit. That just wasn't what happened, that's all. Wei Wuxian was a talent not seen in 1,000 years. That much was true. But the same could be said for many others in his generation. Times of anguish were often fertile grounds for geniuses. Han Guangjun himself, who took Wei Wuxian as his husband, was very nearly perfect in his sect's cultivation style, upright and righteous, even beyond their expectations. And yet he also fulfilled the requirements of Wei Wuxian's Jiang sect, being free in his heart and defying all odds to claim the man he loved. If there was anyone the cultivation world could place their hopes on, it was him. Not Jiang Cheng. Easily angered, overly emotional, too competitive, overly trusting, self-sacrificing, yet selfish. Not Jiang Cheng. And yet, when the lightning tribulation came, when the opportunity to ascend to the heavens appeared, it appeared to Jiang Cheng, not Han Guangjun. The truth was, Jiang Cheng did not cultivate to greatness and godhood. The truth was, it began years ago. The lady of the Jiang sect was cultivating alongside her husband, with her two children brought along to gain experience by proxy. But night hunting was sometimes a dangerous sport, and this particular evening they left them behind in the small, obscure village at the foot of the mountain, a place that no one cared about, nobody noticed. Jiang Yanli was polite and kind to their well-paid hosts. Jiang Cheng was restless and snuck out the window to go walk around. He had very little spiritual energy back then, being only a small child, but his mother was fierce and strict, and he knew the basics. When he found the village children grieving over an injured dog, which panted and whined in agony, he squatted down at once and strained himself to the utmost to transfer his little store of energy to the dog. The dog was healed and tottered to its feet, happily licking the faces of all who came by. "How did you do that?" one of the village children asked, but embarrassed at the new experience of being talked to by a child his own age, Jiang Cheng fled instead of answering. The money the Jiang sect leaders had spent was used, eventually, to send the best and brightest of those children to school. And it just so happened that that child, too, was a talent that hadn't been seen for years. He scored well in the imperial examinations and became an official. He never forgot his home, going back often to Yunmeng and offering money and help to all those who asked. His little obscure village, whose name was commonly forgotten, became wealthy, and its children, now grown, spread out across the land. And with them went their little superstitions, formed in their youth, of praying for good luck from a youth dressed all in purple, who'd said his name was Jiang Cheng. It didn't take long before someone connected the local god that had given the children such fortune with the Jiang Cheng that swept through their lands like a scourge aimed at evildoers, a man who had survived his own family's ruin and resurrected a dead sect from the ashes all on his own, a man who summoned the wind and lightning at will to scold his impudent nephew, a man who would come no matter how far the distance at the mere hint that a demonic cultivator had emerged to torment the common people, refusing to tolerate injustice. The stories, exaggerated through retelling, spread through the common people. It began at the outskirts of Yunmeng, where the cultivators and cynical wits of the Lotus Pier rarely went. And by the time it reached further in, the stories had become fantastical and personal. A sea captain swearing that he'd been rescued from pirates by a lightning storm that sent down purple lightning. A village talking about how Jiang Cheng had come in person to eliminate a demonic cultivator that would have become the next Yilin patriarch if he'd been left unchecked. A housewife shyly whispering about how her children had become filial at last after a mere glimpse of him. When the Jiang sect cultivators, traveling around, first heard the stories, they laughed in delight. Teasing their too prickly sect leader was a popular pastime, since his bark was invariably worse than his bite, and immediately set to telling even more stories. And so the tales of what Jiang Cheng had achieved during the Sunshot campaign, previously limited to the world of cultivators, began to circulate among the common people, even made its way to a certain court official in a far-off capital, who told his emperor about it. It was truly a coincidence that around that time the emperor's favorite son encountered a misfortune, surrounded and assaulted by wicked creatures, and that Jiang Cheng, night-hunting in the area because he couldn't sleep and because he simply refused to stay one moment longer in the house where Hang Guanjun and Wei Wuxian were stuffing everyone full of dog food, was bored enough to intervene with a flick of his finger. The emperor was still laughing about his earnest official's little backwater superstition, for which he'd indulgently lit a candle as a reward for an especially fine display of merit. Such a charming request, so naive and innocent, he could hardly believe it. And he'd added the gold and honors the work had really deserved on top as a matter of course, when he'd received the letter from his son, telling him about how purple lightning had descended from nowhere in a night with a clear sky, saving him from certain death. Only a sailor was more superstitious than an emperor. In his overwhelming relief, he ordered a temple to be built, and the poor folk of the capital flocked over to see who this new god was. It turned out that part of his legend involved dogs, which was fairly rare for a god, and since plenty of people in the capital had dogs that they treasured like part of the family, it was easy enough to accept him. Eventually, the story of the temple and its copycats, quickly constructed or converted, made its way, carried by merchants, to Lanling. The young sect leader there rolled around on the floor laughing and insisted on going to visit every single one of them. He brought his spiritual dog, his friends, and a very great deal of spending money. Every single town that had put up a temple to the god of purple lightning was suddenly flooded with good fortune. Money, money, and more money, with cultivators in yellow competing with those in white to buy better gifts for those at home, and the gifts they liked best of all were the ones sold by the temples. Even the local dogs suddenly all became well-behaved after meeting with the cultivator's husky. It wasn't a husky, it was a fairy, one of the villagers insisted. You're all blind. Didn't you hear the way the cultivator in yellow and gold referred to it? I'm telling you, it was a fairy rescued by Jiang Cheng years ago and given to the cultivator as a gift. Good fortune begets more good fortune. Even more temples began to be built, and the ones that had become rich overnight had not yet had time to formulate the habits of the wealthy. They were initially inclined to spend their money locally, rewarding good deeds, rather than consolidate, influence, or seek position. And that encouraged even more people to come to pray. Eventually, of course, one of the temples ended up in the hands of an ambitious man who used the unexpected fortune to raise his family's stature, and that made the temples a matter of interest to the wealthy, too. It was a joke in the Lotus Pier. Jiang Cheng going around with red ears and a furious temper that refused to hear a further word of it. Not that that stopped anyone, most especially Wei Wuxian, who had taken to telling outrageous tales of the godly Jiang Cheng everywhere he and Hang Guanjun traveled. Outside of it, though, it became less and less of a joke, especially as the wheel turned and the generations shifted. What one generation thought of as novelty, the next accepted as a matter of course. And so, one day, the skies above Yunmeng opened up, the lightning tribulation descending, and Hang Guanjun, Senior Wei, a story has just come. Jiang Cheng ascended to immortality. Don't be ridiculous, Wei Wuxian said with a smile. It's true, the junior insisted. I've heard about it from three different sources. I've even heard that sect leader Jin has already gone to the Lotus Pier to investigate. I heard the senior people there sent him a letter most urgently. An urgent letter? Wei Wuxian asked, smile starting to fade. Lan Chan, do you think something actually happened to that brat Jiang Cheng? Lan Wangji shrugged, indicating that he didn't know. Wei Wuxian huffed, amused, and looked up to the sky. Hey, Jiang Cheng, if you've really ascended to the heavens and become a god, you'd better come and tell me yourself or I'll never forgive you. The sky was clear that day, with only a scattering of pale white clouds. There was nowhere in nature for the rumble of thunder to come from, and Wei Wuxian, who had turned away, turned back to the outside with a confused expression. How had it suddenly become dark? Where had the thunderclouds come from? Why was there lightning? There was a flash so bright it blinded the eyes, searing purple. And suddenly Jiang Cheng was there, standing in front of Wei Wuxian. Don't threaten me. I hate that, he said. Wei Wuxian gaped at him. Jiang Cheng, where? I can't stay long. Too much to do, Jiang Cheng said, scowling. It was a familiar look on his face. Tell Jin Liang he either has to find someone else to do the damn job or consolidate Lotus Pier and Lan Ling and not pray for help too often or I'll break his legs. And anyway, for you. With Wei Wuxian still speechless, he didn't have any time to react before Jin Liang moved, slapping his hand right up against Wei Wuxian's dantian. The weak golden core inside, a gift from Mo Xuan Yu, suddenly glowed bright, strengthening back to what Wei Wuxian had had before he'd given it away. I can't give you more than what you had. Cultivation is fighting the fates, and every man's path is his own, Jiang Cheng said, looking irritated by this inescapable law of the heavens. But at minimum, I can restore your potential. Not that I think you'll stop with the demonic cultivation, because you're you. But at least a stronger golden core will help mitigate the effects and make your lifespan more similar to Han Guanjun's. Who is not getting any sort of gift from me? He added with a glare. Is that understood? Lan Wangqi's eyebrows had arched and he stared wordlessly at Jiang Cheng, who immediately became so uncomfortable with it that he shifted from one leg to the other and then spat. Fine. One gift. Whatever. Think about it carefully. Anyway, I'm going now. Don't bother me too often. But don't not bother me at all, you hear me? Or I'll find a way to break your legs. Another flash of lightning, and he was gone. Wei Wuxian put his hand to his dantian, which still glowed warm, the strength starting to spread through his veins, to his entire body. He'd forgotten how nice the feeling was, having never expected to feel it again. Lan Chan, he said blankly. Did Jiang Cheng? He just... Lan Wangqi exhaled. In anyone else, it might have been called an aggravated sigh.
We should, he said. Probably set up a shrine.
The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening!